Now back to the Butcher Shop on 95.7 The Game. Here's Rick Tittle and Ryan Covey.
No, can do. Welcome back to the show, The Butcher Shop.
This is my jam, by the way, Rick Tittle. Love me some Hall & Oates.
Did you? Do you know that scene, by the way, Rick Tittle, Ryan Covey with you, 95.7 The Game. Dan Ruzanowski talks Sharks hockey coming up in about 28 minutes. Remember that scene in Dodgeball where Vince Vaughn goes into the young lady's house and it's nothing but...
unicorns.
Yeah, and he says, "Sweet Barbara," I think he says that. Mm-hmm. When I was in college, there was a girl that was friends with all of us, our little group of friends.
The crew? And,
yeah, it was kind of a crew. And we went to her hometown, which wasn't too far away. And we went to her house and everything because she was having a party. And then we're like, "Do we get the tour?" And she's like, "Okay, there's just one thing." And I'm like, "What?" She goes, "Well, it shouldn't be that big a deal." And she opened up her room and it was like that, except it was for Hall & Oates. Like all the Teen Beat, Tiger Beat posters, albums, every single ceiling, floor, chairs, walls were Hall & Oates pictures.
Daryl Hall and John Oates. You got mustaches and mullets everywhere.
Yes. And it's funny. The other day I got to do an interview with John Oates. He's still making records, by the way.
So tight.
And it's funny because I don't know him as John Oates. I just know him as Oates.
Oates. You're Oates, bro. You got Hall and you got Oates.
I mean, it's funny because Daryl Hall, I got that. But I don't think of, do you think of him as John Oates?
No, he's just Oates, bro.
He's Oates.
Yeah, you're half of Hall and Oates. You're the Oates half, which is good for you. Best part of that whole scene, though, it's not when Vince Vaughn's in the house. It's when Ben Stiller's character, White Goodman, comes to the door and she goes, "Who is it?" And he goes, "It's White." Like, great news, I'm here. And just the look on his face is one of my favorite things I've ever seen in a movie. It's White!
And then when he says, "Nobody makes White Goodman taste his own blood," then he does, and then the moped.
His fitness consigliere, yeah, Michelle, right, rolls up.
Very good. So for people who didn't know when you said, "What's the deal with Robbie Gould?" and Grant answered, for people who didn't know, Robbie Gould, who has had a fantastic couple of years with the Niners, he made it very clear that he wanted to go replace Cody Parkey and he wanted to go back and be a Chicago Bear again. And he was very good with the Bears as well. Now, you're a lifelong Bears fan, Ryan. I'm a lifelong Raider fan. But Kevin Butler, who was, of course, a great kicker during the heyday, this is what he said about this whole situation to ESPN. He said, "I've always said it to Robbie, be careful what you wish for sometimes, because it's not easy to kick in Chicago. It's certainly not easy to kick in San Francisco, but he's found a situation out there. He's been good as there is. Now, can you duplicate that by coming back to Soldier Field? I don't know, but it is a scary thing to mess with your legacy." End quote. Interesting. Talking about legacy. I've always, that word always kills me because you have no control over, you know, like, "You're the greatest of all time." And it's never anything that you can put your finger on about who's the greatest of all time. But what do you think about that, especially as a Bears fan hearing that?
Well, I'll say this, a couple things. One, Robbie Gould has been phenomenal with the 49ers. And he when the Bears let him go, Giants picked him up. I think he was 10 for 10 with the Giants. I think he's missed only three kicks as a 49er. I think he's made like 80 out of his last 90 or 83 kicks or something absurd like that. I mean, he's been that good, okay? That's incredible, the run that he's been on. Invaluable to this team. Early in his Chicago Bears career, Robbie Gould was cash money. There was a period probably around the third year of his career where he was legitimately the most accurate kicker in NFL history. Now, then he went through a stretch where he was, you know, pretty good, not great. Towards the end of his Bear tenure, Rick, he missed a couple of really big kicks. There was one when the 49ers were there in particular. He missed what amounted to be a chip shot field goal that would have won them the game. I was doing the parabolic microphone that day. I was literally on the sideline in Chicago. Mm-hmm. That was the game that Blaine Gabbert hit Torrey Smith in overtime to beat the Bears. And it was a game where had the Bears won, they would have been 6-6 and potentially to make a run for the playoffs. It was at the start of December. Still a long shot because, you know, Jay Cutler was their quarterback and he's trash. But they still would have been 6-6. Instead, you're 5-7 and your season's over. That was on the heels of him missing a few kicks the previous couple of years in kind of similar circumstances where it's like, hey, this is, you know, one of our bigger kicks of the year. And so he had essentially fallen out of favor with the Bears front office. Now, as a fan, I still wanted to believe in him, but his last couple of years there, I didn't believe in him as much as I had early. So when they were looking to move on from him as a Bears fan, I'll be honest, like, it made sense to me. Like, hey, you know what? Maybe this is one of those where it'll just be best for both parties. Maybe he'll go kick somewhere else now. Bears will get some young blood in there. And if he still goes on to have a great career, no harm, no foul, it's all good. Unfortunately, two things happened. Robbie Gould went back to being the most accurate kicker in NFL history. He's been nails the last couple of years. And the Bears gave a bunch of guaranteed money to some dump truck named Cody Parkey, who missed a bunch of important kicks, including the most important kick of the year, which ended the Bears season. So I can understand the need to want to go get this guy. The Bears, though, aren't in a position salary cap-wise to be trading for a kicker that's making as much money as Robbie Gould is. They cut Cody Parkey despite the fact that they owe him guaranteed money against the cap next year. And they're already up against the cap. They're trying to win a Super Bowl this year. So they don't have a bunch of money to pay Robbie Gould. It's just, it's not happening. So they're hoping to find a way to get this done where they can defer some of the salary, et cetera. But right now, they're pretty far apart because the Niners, A, don't want to trade him, and B, the Bears don't really have a bunch of discernible assets to trade for him.
Well, let me ask you this as a Bears fan. Did they cut Parkey because of his overall performance or because of his apology tour after he missed being the stand-up guy over and over and over again?
Yeah, I think it was probably the latter. I mean, it didn't help that he missed the easiest kick. Well, not the easiest, but the biggest kick of the year, and he had hit a bunch of goalposts, and they paid him a lot of money, and he wasn't reliable. I think there was still a way back after that. But he sunk his battleship when he went on Good Morning America. Matt Nagy specifically referenced that because he said it's about we, and that was a me thing. And it was so contrived, and it was just, oh, I'm such a stand-up guy. Yo, man, nobody, and I mean nobody, that's rooting for the Chicago Bears wants to hear anything ooze out of your face right now, okay? Just ease on into the background. Be the, you know, this altruistic, whatever the hell you want to call it. Do whatever you want, but do it quietly. I don't want to hear from you right now. And that's why he's no longer employed by the Chicago Bears.
By the way, Chilton on Buddy text line, it's pretty good from the 408, talking about Gould's leg, C. It's not bad.
Ew.
It's just oats, bro. Got that. I guess he said it's just oats, bro. this is, you know, it's kind of funny because the Vegas always puts out the over-under numbers for wins for NFL teams. And sure. I just want to ask you about the local teams here.
Lay it on me.
For the Oakland Raiders, their over-under is 6 wins. Do you take over or under?
Ooh, that's kind of right on the money. If I had to pick, I mean, I would say 6. Is it 6.5 or 5.5?
6 even.
6 even? I might have to go under.
I'm going to go under, too. They had, once again, one of the most horrifying defenses of all time. In fact, the worst in their history. And they have the NFL's toughest schedule. So, and they're playing a game in London, which they won't take seriously like last year. So there's an automatic loss there. I don't care who they're playing. I don't care if they're playing Salesian High School. They're going to lose that
one. They're playing the Bears.
Well, then they lost that one for sure. So we both say under on Raiders at 6. I'd love to see them win the Super Bowl. I hope I'm wrong about being under 6. The Niners, this once makes me want to laugh, and it makes me want to take all my possessions and mortgage my house and bet. They have the Niners at 8.
Oh, yeah. Under.
Oh, my gosh.
Under.
The second worst team in football, 8 wins?
Yeah. I got to go under on both there.
You got to play the Rams twice. You got to play the Seahawks twice. Now, you do get to play the Cardinals twice, but they beat you both times last year.
Yeah, and they got to travel across the country for a bunch of games. They got to play at Baltimore, at New Orleans. They got to play at the Redskins, at the Bucks, at the Bengals. Now, I know, oh, those are winnable road games. I'm telling you. West Coast teams traveling across the country for the 10 a.m. start, not optimal. Never is. Doesn't usually go well, especially a bad team like the 49ers.
The lowest odds, 2 teams are at 5 wins. Arizona, which is understandable. We'll see what Kyler Murray does. And then the Miami Dolphins with Josh Rosen.
Yeah, I could see that. I'd say the Cardinals, though. I love the Cardinals offseason. I do. Well, their draft in particular. I thought the Cardinals absolutely nailed the draft. And I guess only time will tell, of course. But I think the Cardinals could turn it around. If I had to pick Cardinals over or Niners over, I'm going Cardinals over for sure.
3 teams are at 10.5 wins. Those are the highest. The Chiefs, the Rams, and where's the other one here?
Patriots?
New Orleans.
Oh, okay.
Your thoughts on 10.5 for Kansas City, Los Angeles Rams, and New Orleans?
The Kansas City Chiefs scares me a little bit just because...
Oh, wait, I lied. New England's at 11. I didn't
see
that.
That's what I was going to say. I figured
New
England had to be there.
They're number one.
Yeah, I would say New England probably. I would say that you could pencil them in for 12 because they get to play the Jets and the Bills and the Dolphins twice. So that's basically 5-1 worst case scenario right out of the gate. The Chiefs is interesting to me, Rick, because I just feel like with the Tyreek Hill situation, you know, they already survived one broadside losing Kareem Hunt last year. And I know Damian Williams came in and did a nice job. They gave him a contract. You know, they traded for Frank Clark. They've tried to add to that defense, which was abysmal last year. But Patrick Mahomes had to put up video game numbers for that team to win a couple of those football games
last
year.
And now Tyreek Hill's not going to play.
That's what I'm saying. So I wonder. Now, still, should it be enough to get them to 11 wins? Probably. But I just feel like... what were they last year? 13-3, I want to say. Maybe even 14-2, if memory serves. So it's definitely going to be hard to replicate that. And let me put it to you like this. I love Pat Mahomes. I think Pat Mahomes is absolutely the real deal. They were 12-4 last year. So even so, I think that 10-6, it's just 10 flat or 10.5? 10.5?
10.5.
Yeah. I'd probably say over, but I wouldn't feel great about it. The Rams one, I think the Rams have that locked up. I think the Rams are looking at 11-5, 12-4, simply because that defense is still studly. They're going to get Cooper Kupp back. I love Sean McVay as a play caller. And if Todd Gurley isn't up to the task, they've got C.J. Anderson. They've got Marlon Brown coming
is
back.
Is he back, C.J. Anderson?
They have that other running back, too. I think it's, not Marlon Brown. The other running back that they had last year that got injured, he had a big game in...
Mac?
No. What the heck is his name?
Dick Hurts?
No, get away from me.
Phil McCracken?
Anyway, bottom line is, based on their personnel, I feel like the Rams are going to keep on winning football games next year. And they get to play the Cardinals, the 49ers. You know, they'll be good in the division.
Well, one more question about these over-unders. In that same division, this is an intriguing one. Seattle, 8.5.
Yeah, I'm going to say over for Seattle. I am.
Baldwin's done. They just re-signed.
They got DK Metcalf.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. C.J. Anderson's a Lion. You're right, but they got his backup. So that they had last year that got injured. His name's escaping me right now. But I like Seattle every year. Let me put it like this. I sleep on Seattle every year. I think this is the year that they're not going to be any good. And for some, they always find a way to win. And Seattle's never an easy place to go and play for the opposition. They're going 6-2 at home usually. Minimum. I mean, they were good at home again last year. They were 6-2 at home last year. So if they can go 500 on the road, 6-2 at home, there you go. There's 10 wins right there. Boom.
I'm trying to think who that backup was now. Malcolm Brown, John Kelly, Justin Davis.
Yeah, was it Malcolm Brown?
Yeah,
that's what I was talking about. Yeah.
Okay. Lines are open at 888-957-9570. You're talking a little foot of a ball. Oh, wait, here it is. 510, Malcolm Brown.
Yeah,
there
that's what I was talking about. Yeah.
The 209 says, what does Vegas know that we don't? 8 wins is very interesting. Now, here's the thing. Vegas is uncanny when it comes to these things, especially point spreads and all that stuff. They know more than we do, and I don't know how, whether there's something under the table, but they think the Niners are going to win 8 games.
I think it's more a product, too, of the public believes the 49ers are going to win more games than they probably are. So I think some of that is where the money's coming in. Because, you know, we will see some of these lines move before the season starts. And by and large, the narrative for the 49ers is they're getting their franchise quarterback. I think most folks feel Kyle Shanahan's a heck of a play caller. They're bringing in Dee Ford, Quan Alexander, Nick Bosa, Jason Verrett. They're adding a lot of pieces to that defense. And they just went out and got a couple more wide receivers. They've got the best tight end, or one of the best tight ends in football. You had Tevin Coleman doing already pretty good running back room. It's year number two for Mike McGlinchey. You still got Joe Staley on the other side. I don't see it, but I can see why the public might think that the 49ers are going to make a big-time leap this year.
Paul in Stockton says, hey, Rick, the Raiders have to travel over 30,000 miles. The Jets only have to travel 9,000. Listen, I've never bought into this. This is a psychological thing First of all, you're traveling on a private charter. You don't have to go through the airport. You're staying at a Four Seasons. I have zero sympathy for athletes and this whole thing that they'll say, oh, you know, like baseball team, oh, there was a rain delay and they didn't get into town until 4:30 in the morning. I have zero sympathy. And by the way, you can blame your owner who 4 years in a row wanted to make sure that the Raiders would only play 7 games in Oakland. He's the one, even though he knows they're going to lose, he's the one that wants to go to London. So don't get mad at the NFL when your owner 4 years in a row pleads with the commissioner, please let us take one last game in Oakland. We'll go to Mexico City, London. We'll go to Djibouti, Tierra del Fuego, or Reykjavik, Iceland.
Yeah, and it's horrible for me this year because they're supposed to play the Bears in Oakland this year, and that was going to be the Bears coming to my backyard. I could take a BART train to a Bears game, and now I can't. Thanks a lot, Mark Davis, your sorry-ass haircut.
Oh, you went there.
I did.
That's too easy.
All right, with your cheap track suit, wannabe OG, looking like somebody's bad nightmare.
If the Raiders win 3 games, I won't.
Taking up for the Raiders over there? You won't hear me slander the Oakland
Raiders?
You can
do whatever you want. Listen, I'm not an employee. I'm just a fan. The 408 says, if the Raider apostrophe S win 3 games, we'll be surprised. My main pet peeve is of, should of, could of, when they mean have. And I always say, people who think that apostrophe S means plural, I'll never read the text, but I started to read it and it was too late.
Oh, okay. You're a grammar snob?
I'm a grammarian when it's that dumb. When somebody thinks apostrophe S means plural, if the Raider apostrophe S win 3 games, I will be surprised. 707, injuries are going to kill the Niners. Wow, Nostradamus?
Hey, they make a good point. And to that end, D. Ford, injury history. Quan Alexander coming off an ACL. You got a quarterback coming off an ACL.
McKinnon.
McKinnon's coming off an ACL. Quan Alexander. Jason Verrett's had a bunch of injuries in his career. You look at that secondary. Those guys are all hurt every single year. Richard Sherman was the most durable out of all of them. Colbert, Ward. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And that's been a problem for this team for the last couple of years. So you already have a team that's got a history of injury trouble, and then you go out and sign a bunch of free agents that have injury history of their own. All I'm saying is you don't be sitting there in October going, damn, why is half our team on IR? I mean, doesn't it seem like you'd be lucky if they're not?
It's kind of funny. You know, you think about Richard Sherman, and people will say, you know, he was coming off his devastating injury, and he's really not the guy he was in Seattle. But it's hard to tell because they never threw at him.
Yeah, why would you do that when you got to kill a Witherspoon? It's open for business. That's why on the other side of the field.
The kid from Fairfield, Verrett, and another guy who's been nothing but hurt his whole career, if that guy can play, then maybe we'll see it.
Yeah, and if he can stay on the field, that's a pretty big if, though. Is that an if apostrophe S? Yes? If he could stay on the field?
No, that would be really bad if someone put ifs.
Yeah, right. Sorry.
You know, it's funny. When I was in high school, I used to get gas at this Beacon in Richmond, and there was a huge sign that said cigarettes apostrophe S, and it always killed me every time I pulled in. But also,
it just annoyed the hell out of you.
It annoyed
too,
me so bad.
You the way I do.
Cigarettes apostrophe S. But every time I'd pump gas there at that Beacon in Richmond, there'd always be a guy come up with all these chains, all this bling,
sure. Yeah.
And it said, "Buy a chain for your lady." And I thought, no, I say no thanks, but I thought, you know, your girlfriend, you just give her a chain. Like, where's the box?
Hey, it's like, you just put it around her neck. You'd be like, I got you something, boo. Just put it around her neck.
Boo. I didn't say boo back then, but. And then she'd say, what house? I don't know.
And why is my neck green now?
It was all boosted. Well, no, I think it was probably real. I don't think
that it was stolen. That is a grandiose assumption you're making, Rick.
A guy with a handful of jewelry at a gas station in Richmond? Richmond, dude.
He might have got it at an estate sale or something. You don't know that?
My buddy, remember back in the day when people were so afraid of getting their car stereo stolen, they'd put an alarm on their car? Like, who the hell cares about a $100 car stereo? Isn't your life more important? But anyway, there'd be a guy in the parking lot at Salesian, and he had about 50 car stereos.
Yeah.
And one time I was tempted. There was like a badass Pioneer, and I'm like, I can't afford that. And he's like, $20. I'm like, oh, I want to buy it so bad. But
was I hating 510? And he's an all capser. Shut up, hater. Focus on getting a kicker who won't choke. Ooh.
Haters.
I know. Actually, I'm not the GM, so it's cool, bro.
What is he talking about? Cody Parking?
Yeah, I guess. But hey, maybe I was being too real about the 49ers. I mean, look, let me put it to you like this. 510-940. No, just kidding. let me put it to you like this.
Oh, you. And by the way, you will get mad at these guys.
Well, I'll just call you out. It's all good. No, you can say whatever you want. The all caps thing's a little off-putting. Yeah. But I hope the Niners are good this year. I want to talk about good football. I do. You can't argue with my point, though. They've got a bunch of guys that have been hurt, and then you go out and sign a bunch of other guys with injury history. All I'm saying is, don't be surprised if you're sitting there in October, November, and half your team's on IR. I think that's so out of pocket, but I'm hating. Sometimes the truth hurts. Don't hate the truth. Live it. Be it.
I think deal with it. Don't hate it. Celebrate it.
There you go.
What does it got? Don't hate, celebrate?
I don't know.
Haterade, something like that.
You know it's true.
One guy, these are all from the 510, boxless jewelry for sale and the rich is 100% real. It was definitely real, Rick. It was definitely real. It was boosted. Yeah, I know. This isn't like going into Macy's and you say, why is this silver necklace $15 and why is this silver necklace $90? Well, wear it for 3 days. And then you'll find out why when your skin oxidizes.
Yeah, exactly. Why is this turning green?
510. Hey, you guys are awesome. No bias, lots knowledge. Wish you guys on. Get my drift. Nice listen, honest options.
Boom. We're good.
You know what?
He says honest opinions.
Honest.
It's honest
opinions. Yeah. Okay, I can't read.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
I think when you go, this whole thing about not using punctuation, it makes me cough.
Rick Tittle is the grammar police. Yeah, he's losing it over here. I got to help you out over there.
Half the grammarian. You know what's funny one time? Let me just tell you a story here before you go. You guys, I'm going to bring Ruzanowski in here.
Scar!
When this station first started in 2011.
You were here.
I was doing shows with JD. In fact, we did a show Christmas morning 2011 because no one loved us and we wanted to stay live and local. But there was one time I got this coughing fit. So I did the talking hand symbol, like, you know, the chicken dance. To JD, like, you have to
talk, bro.
And I went out in the hall, and I coughed up a lung. I came back in. I'm like, I'm okay now. And then he did it. And then he went out. I go, what are the odds? And I'm like, good thing we didn't have it at the same time. And now that I say that, it's actually not that funny of an anecdote. 510.
You tried.
Shout out to Salesian High alumni class of 1999. 20-year reunion coming up. When I coached football there, I coached there for 3 years after I graduated. And it's funny, there was a guy, you can always tell, and I'm tooting my own horn, you can always tell if your players like you when they come up and talk to you later. But I'll be somewhere, and a guy with a gray beard, yo, coach, what's up? I go, I coach you, you look like my dad.
Right.
These guys are in their 40s.
Yeah, you're stoked.
They were kids. What the hell happened? You know what happened?
I got to go focus on getting a kicker because I'm hating. So we got to go to break. I got to focus.
All right. You know what we're going to do? And we don't get to do it often. I'm so happy we're allowed to do this.
We don't need to qualify it. I'm tired of qualifying Sharks talk. We're going to talk about the Sharks because we love this team and they're in the playoffs.
I know. But I just said I would do when they did their outdoor game.
Yeah.
Roxy and I did a 3-hour pregame show. Just hockey. We had great guests.
Ooh,
Eddie Olczyk.
Awesome.
I know. That's the longest we ever. We did 3 hours of just hockey.
But the ratings were through the roof, baby. Let's go.
I was in heaven. But when we come back from the break, the voice of the Sharks, Dan Ruzanowski, next. It's Tittle and Covey, 95.7 again.
Nobody makes me bleed my own blood. Nobody!
Now back to the Butcher Shop on 95.7 The Game. Here's Rick Tittle and Ryan Covey.
Welcome back to 95.7 The Game. Great to have you with us tonight. Rick Tittle and Ryan Covey will take you all the way till 11 o'clock. It is our pleasure to be joined by the only voice the San Jose Sharks have ever had, Dan Ruzanowski, and it's exciting times. The Sharks tomorrow night will be playing Game 4 against the Lanch in the second round of the Western Conference playoffs in Denver tomorrow night. And the Sharks are up 2-1. And I tell you what, Dan, I was watching that game and I was excited the Sharks got up 2-0, but the Lanch came back, scored two. I swear that whole third period was played in front of Jones's crease. They hit the pipe over and over and over. And yet the Sharks, so resilient, yet again with Couture and then adding the empty netter lately. Everything that's happened with Pavelski and everything else, I'm starting to feel like this is a team of destiny, but I'm trying not to get too carried away, and I'm knocking on wood as I say it. What do you think?
Well, we're all knocking on that same piece of wood, I think. And I really do believe that this team going into the playoffs was more prepared to make a long run than the team that actually went to the Stanley Cup final in 2016. And I've been saying that for about half of the season. They just dealt with different bits of adversity so exceedingly well. And I really believe that that they're prepared to deal with any kind of problem after having gone through what they went through in the Vegas series. They really are prepared for anything. They can deal with any kind of adversity, including the loss of their captain, and including having teams fight back, or even in the case of the Vegas Golden Knights being up 3-1 and up 3-0 in Game 7. So I don't want to say team of destiny. Probably wrong to say that yet. Those are the things you say after the season is over. And after you start talking about parades and rings and things like that. But we all know from the experience here that there's a long way to go and that the Sharks are only partially down this road.
Hey, Dan, you know, the Vegas series was so taxing and obviously rallying from a 3-1 deficit, the drama in Game 7, it took something out of the fan base. Obviously, it took a whole heck of a lot more out of the players. Did you get the sense that maybe it took a couple of games for them to kind of mentally turn the page? Not that they weren't engaged, it's just Colorado is just such a different style of team. The series isn't as physical. They're a little more top-heavy. Just a new set of challenges, and that's what the playoffs will bring. But I just felt like that first-round series took so much out of them.
Well, it's not so much taking so much out of them. That happens every playoff series. But round one was a war. It could have very easily been a Stanley Cup final. That's how good the two teams were. That's how good the Vegas Golden Knights were all season. So you can expect mental fatigue that does occur during the course of that going over into the next round. And so you just can't avoid that. You have to fight your way through it. I think in Game 2 when the Sharks lost, that mental fatigue got the best of them a little bit. And the best sign that I got about the series was the way they fought back and made it a 4-3 game. They got their mojo back. They got back into playing the way they needed to play. And again, as you alluded to, adjust to the fact that this was a very different animal that they were facing in the Colorado Avalanche as opposed to the Vegas Golden Knights. And now, let's not forget, Colorado was doing the same thing. They were adjusting to the fact that the Sharks were definitely a different animal than the Calgary Flames were, and that they were going to be a tougher opponent. And so we see this back-and-forth pairing that's going on. You throw a left, I block with the right, and so forth, in the course of this playoff series. And I just think we're in for a tremendous series that's only just getting underway right now with the Sharks up 2-1.
We look at the Avalanche. Obviously, we know what MacKinnon did against Calgary. We're very familiar with Landeskog and, of course, our old friend Matt Nieto. Tell us a little bit more about some of the Avalanche players that maybe the casual hockey fan don't know about.
I really love Samuel Girard, who's a defenseman just coming back from injury, actually, in this series. He's very crafty with the puck, difficult to hit, extremely intelligent in making decisions. He's going to frustrate you because he's a guy that you want to have physical contact with, and yet you can't really touch him all the time. His partner, Cale Makar, fourth overall in the NHL draft when he was selected out of the University of Massachusetts, just finished his college season and played in the national championship game, won the Hobey Baker Award, which, as your listeners know, is college hockey's version of the Heisman Trophy, is the best player in college hockey. And after playing in the NCAA championship game, they actually had a charter plane for him in Buffalo, ready to fly into Denver to go right into the thick of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And so here's a guy that amazes me in the fact that he is playing such a high level as such an inexperienced pro. He's going to have his ups and downs during the course of his pro career, but he looks like he is going to be an elite defenseman in this league for a long time. And it's one of the reasons why Colorado got that charter plane to him, get him directly to Denver as quickly as possible once he decided to turn pro. So those are two players that come to mind. The other player we haven't mentioned yet is Mikko Rantanen, who's an interesting story. He's often put on the same line with MacKinnon and with Landeskog. They've been playing them separately for parts of games, but when the going gets tough, Coach Jared Bednar puts them all three together as just a really fearsome line. And this guy was drafted one pick after Timo Meier. So So you can't help but make the comparison. They're both elite players. The Sharks could have drafted Rantanen and, in fact, interviewed him very heavily along with Timo Meier, decided to pick Timo Meier ninth overall, and Rantanen went to Colorado 10th. So that's an interesting comparison to make. He's an excellent skill player with good size. He's got strength on the boards and has got a whale of a shot. Those are a couple of players to really pay attention to that I think deserve a lot of credit and certainly credibility from a Colorado standpoint.
You know, Dan, I think the 2016 run to the Cup Finals, there's a lot of this team that was obviously members of that squad as well, and I just feel like that experience served them so well. And, you know, I look at a guy like Logan Couture, who had a great playoff that season as well, and there he was again last night, you know, picking up a hat trick, and, you know, obviously with the Sharks captain being out of the lineup, I know they don't have any shortage of leaders, but I just feel like Logan Couture has now kind of evolved and really taken that next step, both on the ice and in the room, of just a bona fide superstar and a leader on this team. You've been with him from the very beginning, Dan. You know, just kind of talk about his progression.
Sorry. Well, he is. He's an elite person and an elite player. He's somebody that hates losing more than the average player. And I put Logan Couture and Joe Pavelski in this category. And I know probably some of the listeners are probably thinking, Dan, what do you mean? Everybody hates to lose. Nobody wants to do anything but win, especially when you're a professional athlete. But I put these two players, Pavelski and Couture, in a different stratosphere when it comes to the hatred, the real despising of losing. And I think that that motivates him to really compete. They're just, you know, Logan is such a competitive person. And, you know, every time I see it, a good example of that is during the course of his life, his family, a lot of people don't know this, are really big in the world of lacrosse. His mother, her last name was Lemon, and her family, they have some of the greatest lacrosse players ever to play in Canada. And on the other side, there's another hockey player you may have heard of named John Tavares, who plays for the Toronto Maple Leafs, first overall in the draft. His family, his uncle, also named John Tavares, is considered the greatest player in the history of Canada in the world of lacrosse. So the two families have had a rivalry, not only in hockey, but in lacrosse. And when Logan Couture played against Tavares in junior, he got hit and knocked out for 6 weeks with a concussion by a check from John Tavares. And so every time that they play each other, I'm telling you, Logan Couture has a massive game and really plays well against John Tavares. And it just goes back to that competitive edge, that way that he is. That's the way he was from the very start of game number three. You know, he scored the first goal and he had that little interesting, almost taunting the fans with his celebration, which was kind of gutsy, and he just continued to back it up with delivery when it really matters. I think that he's a real leader in that way. I think that he's learning to understand what it might take to be a captain in the NHL one day, and who knows, it might happen in his career before too long, down the road when his current captain, Joe Pavelski, becomes a senior and graduates. But that's really what I can say about Logan, is that he's a big-time player. And let's not forget something else. Since 2010, the player who scored the most playoff goals is Alex Ovechkin, the grade eight. Not a surprise. Guess who's number two? Logan Couture. He's ahead of Sidney Crosby in playoff goals since that time, according to the stats that I was looking at yesterday. So that's pretty impressive, and yet it's something that goes largely unnoticed in the major markets back east in terms of the hockey world. And I think that this is a season that again, as was the case in 2016, when he had an amazing playoff, that Logan will again prove to be one of the real elite game, big game players in hockey.
Last question, Dan. I know you got to run. After Game 5 against Vegas, there was some reporter that asked DeBoer after the match that, hey, do you think this has quieted some of Martin Jones's critics? And DeBoer said, well, you guys are the critics. There's no one here who's critical. We believe in him. And then he goes out and has arguably the greatest game for any goalkeeper in Sharks history in Game 6. What is this about Jones that he's just really turned it around and is so hot right now?
Well, he's got the demeanor of a great goaltender, and that demeanor is he doesn't let things bother him too much. I think that during the tough times that we like to talk about for parts of the regular season and certainly in the early stages of the playoff series against Vegas, he was beginning to question himself a little bit, and he realized, wait a second, who am I? What do I do? And he decided, he said this on our Sharks radio broadcast in game number three last night, that he wanted to just go back to the process, to forget about the extraneous noise, to sit down with Johan Hedberg and start to go about his day in the way that he's always done when he's been successful, to believe that he's a great goaltender, to know that he's going to be a big difference, and to, again, embrace the process of the routine of being a great goaltender. And when he started doing that, when he started making sure he got a good night's sleep and doing all those other things that he has to do, all of a sudden the puck started to hit him. And I think that, in part, the team in front of him also began to play in a way that was going to accentuate that. So it's a combination of things, but I just think that Martin Jones has the demeanor of a goaltender that doesn't let things bother him. He's always stable. And when he makes that first save early in the game, he made a couple of big ones in Game 3, one on Alexander Kerfoot that was an amazing stop that might have changed the tenor of that game. Then all of a sudden he feels that confidence that's so important to every goaltender. That mental confidence is critical, and that's something that I think he was battling for a little bit during the course of the latter part of the season and the playoffs. So I think that he's on his game. I think that he's ready for another great series, and he's certainly having one here against the Avalanche.
That's Dan Ruzanowski, the voice of the Sharks. Dan, thanks for your time, and have a great call tomorrow night, and we'll see you Saturday night at the Tank.
Thanks, Dan.
You bet. Thank you.
Oh, man, I'm so excited. I just
can't hide it.
By the way, this is we have about 9 minutes left, so all sporting topics are welcome. Football, basketball, baseball, hockey, soccer, golf, tennis, auto racing, boxing, Olympics, Quidditch, rollerball, chess, checkers, rugby, cricket, 888-957-9570.
No curling?
We can throw curling in there. Somebody said, add drone racing.
I'm not... Kick rocks.
Kick rocks. That's what Zach used to say. Cutting... there's a text here on the Chilton on Body text line 95795. Rick Tittle, shout out to the gas station on the corner of Cunning and Harbor. Now, I'll tell you what, I probably shouldn't say this.
That's not right.
But before we were 21, there were certain places that you could get beer.
Coin Op on Telegraph. He used to buy beer there all the time.
There was one place I didn't buy, but we used to spot, which would mean we would give a hobo a dollar.
A shoulder tap.
Shoulder tap? We called it spot. We'd spot like, so Atlas Liquor, it's still there. You know, it's down by Potrero on San Pablo. There was a place called Michael's Bottle Shop on Solano, and one of my friends ruined it because she got busted. And then my homies on Cutting, on Barrett, actually, Valmar in Richmond.
All right.
And I remember I never felt more guilty in my life than when I went in, and the thing was, you know, he didn't check the ID if it was your buddy, right?
Let's play it cool.
Okay, yeah. And as I'm leaving, he hands me $20 change that I wasn't supposed to get because they gave him exact change. And now there's a line, and I'm already, like, nervous, so I keep walking. Now I feel like a thief.
Right.
Because I was by, and I thought, and I saw him later. I go, why'd you do that? And he goes, no, just a little extra. I don't want that.
Wow.
I never felt more guilty, and so I gave it back to him. I go, it's one thing to sell me beer when I'm 16.
Right.
Don't throw a 20 on it.
Yeah, and just something just feels all wrong.
See, I mean, it's 60... not like Mix-a-Lot. Skeezer from another crew. She picked it up and kissed it. My homeboy, Ellen, he wouldn't slap her face. PLB, cold spray, that boy with mace.
Well, I never did like a punk that beat up on his girl.
If you don't have game, then let her leave your world.
Thank you.
Right, this is the whitest show of all time.
By the way, yeah, we used to go from Lafayette. We'd ride out to Telegraph, and where the Coin Op Laundry is, there's a little liquor store right next door to that. We called it Coin Op, even though it wasn't Coin Op Liquor Store, because it was next to the Coin Op Laundry, and they would sell us booze there. The other thing we were very adept at, Rick, was pulling a runner, getting your Marcus Allen on, going in there, getting a couple 4-0s, one under each arm, heading for the end zone, baby.
You would steal them.
You would, absolutely. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
just win, baby.
That's it.
By the way, you know who's listening to this? The Lord.
Thank you. Well, you know what? You know what I've learned about the Lord? He forgives you.
Wow. Not if you go in with that attitude.
Not if you keep acting like that. He don't.
650, Rick, how do you feel about Tottenham's chances against Ajax? Likewise with Liverpool. Well, let's talk about it real quick. I'm a Tottenham fan. You're a Liverpool fan. Yesterday, Tottenham threw out a lineup with the likes of some real scrubs. In fact, when it was late, Pochettino just decided to try and just go with the one away goal and live with it. And he put on guys like Juan Foyt and Ben Davis. So they have to go to the Amsterdam Arena, or now that's called the Johan Cruyff Arena, on Wednesday. I think about their quarterfinal with Man City when Aguero scored and he got the away goal. Just listen, Sonny will be playing in that game. the Tottenham are still in with a shout. Now, for Liverpool, Ryan Covey, take it away.
Yeah, it's a wrap, man. It was, you know, 1-0 at the half. Barca was playing, as you might expect, at the Nou Camp. And then Liverpool brought it in the second half. They just couldn't break through. Mane had a great chance to score at the end of the first half. Liverpool probably dominated the opening 20 minutes of the second half. And then they knocked Messi to the ground, and they done pissed off the GOAT. And he scored on a rebound where Suarez put one off the bar, which was definitely against the run of play. And then their third goal was just a thing of absolute class, absolute beauty. So you tip your cap. It would have been nice if Liverpool could have just stolen an away goal, even at 3-1, because it is a plausible scenario that they could win at Anfield 2-0, and that would go through on the away goal. Unfortunately, now 3-0 to force extra time. It could happen, but it's not going to. And unfortunately, this is going to culminate a Champions League semifinal with probably finishing second place in the Premier League with 97 points. So it's going to be a tough summer. I'm proud of the squad, Rick, for everything they've accomplished this year. But damn, enough with these runner-up silver medals, almost there. That's just the life of a Liverpool fan these days.
He done pissed off the GOAT. I like
they
that.
Did.
I like
off
that
the
quote.
GOAT.
Well, listen, Liverpool has had a lot of success.
No trophies, though.
In my lifetime.
Under Klopp. Yeah, you're right, though. They have.
Well,
sorry,
I mean under Kenny Dalglish.
I know, and I got you. Yeah.
They've been champions. They've been champions. Europe, of course, it was their fans. I was actually in Europe for the Heysel disaster. I wasn't in Brussels in 85 for Liverpool-Juve game, but all English teams kicked out of Europe for 5 years. And when Tottenham won the FA Cup in 91, that was the first year back in the Cup Winners' Cup. Aston Villa went to the UEFA Cup, and we still had it. And that was back when the Champions League was just champions.
Right.
Not runners-up and third place and fourth place teams. Then, of course, they took the Cup Winners' Cup and the UEFA Cup, and they put it together into the Europa League. And then the big teams that lose early in the Champions League, they get to drop down into the Europa League. And that all happened when Blackburn, who won the Prem in 93, and they lost to Viking Stavanger, I think it was. And
with Alan Shearer.
In North. That was SAS. Sutton and Shearer. That was a great team. Tim Sherwood was actually the captain of that team at Ewood Park back in the day, if it's all right. 408, Juan Foyt put in more work and decent crosses compared to anyone else. Yeah, it was a little scary seeing Juan Foyt go forward because he's so young. He's already married, too. I don't know these guys. They all get married when they're 20. I want to tell them, look,
don't you do it.
No, stay with your girl. Just don't get married. You're 20 years old. What are you thinking? Anyway, he was on for 5 minutes. I wouldn't say more than any else, but that just shows you the depth. I mean, you look at a team like Man City, they have two teams full of internationals.
Dude, I hate Man City. I know Manchester United, as a Liverpool fan, is supposed to be my arch rival, and they are. Screw the Reds. And by the way, thanks for getting smoked by Man City the other day when you could have done us a real solid. But I am really, really growing to despise Manchester City as the years go on.
This guy from the 925 has texted me 5 times, who's obsessed with the fact, he says that he thinks I sound like Mike Greenberg. He says, you're ignoring me. You know you sound like him, and you know it. I don't know his voice. Mike Greenberg.
And what does it matter if you
I don't know.
Why are you harassing my guy Rick Tizzle? Well,
man? You know what? It's time I revealed myself. This actually is Mike Greenberg. And
I always
wanted to work at a local market.
I'm Golic then? Can we be Greeny and Golic? Run it back one more time?
Oh, that's who Mike Greenberg is.
Yeah, Greeny and Golic.
Oh, okay.
By the way, any chance Man City drops points at home to Leicester or at Brighton on the final game of the year?
Yes. Right, it's cool. The Premier League.
Let's go, baby. That's what I'm talking about. All I need is a draw.
It's the Premier League. This is why we like it.
I like you, Rick. Thanks for hanging out tonight.
Well, we've got.
No, I'm just saying in general. No, I know we got a little time.
I know you got your backpack on.
I got to catch a BART train.
You got the backwards hat. You're ready to run.
Oh, I heard about this. You're not a fan.
You heard about it.
Urban told me. Michael Urban. I did a show with him this weekend. He said he rolled in with the backwards lid one time, and you were not feeling it.
No. I said I'm not a backwards hat type of guy. Is what I said.
All right.
It's a different generation. That's more of a kind of a bro-y type of thing, the backwards hat.
All right.
Facial hair, piercings, tats. I don't see piercings or tats.
I've got tats.
But I'm the old, yeah, see, I'm from a different generation. I'm from the generation I voted for Taft.
I got you. Oh, it's like, oh, so you've got tattoos, huh? So you're not employed? You know.
I always wonder, like, the guy who has a skull tattooed on his neck, and then he tells his... he disciplines his son. Doesn't the son just laugh at him?
Well, it's
like, I'm supposed to take you seriously?
Yeah, when you commit to the neck tat or the face tat, you're basically saying, I'm not worried about impressing a would-be employer at any point in my life.
Well, I know that when you're young, you want to look cool. I just think that people, they don't think it out. These kids today with their purple hair and their Sony Walkman.
I got you. You are too much, Rick Tittle.
And this guy says it's a compliment. I don't know why he was so adamant. He sends a text, please don't ignore me, Rick. Is this Glenn Close turning a light bulb on and
don't
off?
Don't ignore me, Rick!
I'm not going to be ignored!
Don't you do it. I'm a hater, though.
You're still obsessed? Somebody called you
a hater.
I'm
obsessed. Yeah,
hater.
I'm obsessed.
Hater's going to hate.
That's
all right.
Right.
Hey, listen, coming up next, it's the network. And Ryan Covey, thanks for hanging out.
Thanks
for 4 hours.
Lucas and Spadoni. What do we have? Dan Rusinowski.
See you next time. 95.7 The Game.